With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. Vast rural land purchases in Solano County stir concerns at a hearing. Farmers and their advocates say the state could seek to protect agricultural resources and open space amid concerns raised over a company buying large swaths of farmland in Solano County. At the state capitol last week, the state Senate Agricultural Committee held a panel discussion on, quote, navigating threats to California agriculture. The discussion was inspired by a venture known as Flannery Associations, LLC. Since 2018, the group, backed by Silicon Valley billionaires, has amassed 400 parcels spanning nearly 55,000 acres of agricultural zoned land near Travis Air Force Base. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report. And now let's get into today's show headlines. Stabenow touts CCC dollars to boost Farm Bill baseline. More after the break. Senate Ag Chair Debbie Stabenow is touting CCC dollars as a viable cushion to help supplement scarce Farm Bill dollars. Stabenow told farm reporters outside of the Senate chamber last week that she and ranking Ag Republican John Boozman appealed to USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack for trade promotion dollars from the CCC.
At the top of the list of all the hearings we've done has been trade promotion, marketing assistance to help be able to sell our products overseas. And so we've asked the Secretary to provide dollars to the CCC to meet that need and to do it quickly so we're not waiting till the end of the year.
And by doing so, cushioning a farm bill whose funding the budget committees won't increase.
We're looking for every way to expand funding to get things done for our farmers. And so we'll see what they determine in terms of the amount of money from the CCC, but I expect if the Secretary is able to do it, that it will be robust funding.
Stabenow says up to $30 billion in CCC dollars is available for commodity efforts in the Market Assistance Program by McGovern Dole Humanitarian Assistance.
A large part of that is already the way we fund the Farm Bill. So it's not that there's $30 billion additional.
Not brand new money, but funds USDA has had hands-on each fiscal year. House lawmakers, meantime, returned from their summer break this week. Ag Chair G.T. Thompson has also been slowed by trying to find savings to cushion the Farm Bill baseline. And now, by looming partisan fights over government-wide spending, likely to devour floor time. Thompson says this could cause him to delay committee action. An AFB contributed to that report. And now here's AgNet West's Brian German with more agriculture news.
Trial work is continuing to measure which materials have the most efficacy on citrus thrips. UC Cooperative Extension citrus farm advisor Sandeepa Gotam explained some of the trial results on how different materials are impacting thrip populations.
These are the products that I tested during 2022 and 23. Beleaf obviously seems to be one of the best products, but I didn't test other products. We tested Minectopro this year, but Minectopro didn't provide us the level of efficacy it had been providing in previous year trials. In the trials that Beth Graff and Cardwell did, in several repetitive trials, Minectopro was the best product. Minectopro is a mixed compound, abamectin and exirel, cyantraniprole. This year's trial, Beleaf seems to be the best product. Another product that we tested, which is not registered, is prednisolone, was also very effective.
Support for market expansion and increasing mechanization are two of the specialty crop priorities for the upcoming Farm Bill. Director of Government and Public Policy for the California Fresh Food Association, Adam Borchard, said there does seem to be pretty broad support for specialty crop interests within Farm Bill discussions.
Obviously, the budget number is going to be the critical factor, as we've seen this year with the Congress. But there is bipartisan support and support across the country in the specialty crop industries in the states that are affected. You know, it's kind of remarkable that we're able to promote our industry abroad, but we're not able to in the domestic market. And then with respect to mechanization, we're not looking for a complete federal handout. What we're looking is a cost share with private partners, similar to what we do on EQIP for conservation measures, just providing additional funding that helps leverage growers to be able to buy mechanized equipment for their operations.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
If your soil could talk, what would it say? If it's healthy, it may already be saying some good things about your future. Because farmers who use soil health building systems that include no-till, cover crops, and diverse species and rotations report greater productivity, profitability, and resiliency to weather extremes. Learn more about what your soil is saying about its health and your future. Contact your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, September is California Wine Month, a celebration enjoyed by people around the nation. I talked with Gino DiCaro of the California Wine Institute to get more information.
Excellent. Thank you, Sabrina. September harvest for wine grapes just provides the perfect backdrop for us to celebrate California's wine industry, and certainly this is the 19th annual celebration, and it's a chance for all Californians and other travelers who are coming to California to raise a glass to the state's wine industry and celebrate its people, its regions, and wines and growers and experiences. And there are more than 70 events up and down the state, from hands-on harvest boot camps to tours to wine festivals. Basically, anywhere you are in California, there is an event to attend to celebrate California's wine. And, you know, the industry, I'll say, supports about 422,000 workers in California, about 1.1 million nationally, and about $170 billion is produced in annual economic activity from the industry. So there is lots to celebrate, including the beautiful wines and 100 different grape varietals that we're growing here in California. So we encourage your listeners to go to discovercaliforniawines.com to get all the information and to find an event locally to go attend and celebrate and enjoy.
So you know an awful lot about wine. Can you tell me what makes California wine so special?
Yeah, really good question. You know, California's landscape for wine grape growing is one of the most unique in the world. The valley enclosed by its mountainous regions and the gaps that allow the cool ocean air to flow into the valley. So you have those cool morning airs to grow grapes is literally a perfect climate to grow. Like I said, California's more than 100 grape varietals. And nowhere in the world will you find that type of a climate, which is why we now have approximately 6,200 wineries all total in California. And we produce about more than 81% of the country's wine, and we export about 95% of our country's wine as well. So not only do Californians and U.S. citizens get to enjoy over here, but our wine's enjoyed across the globe.
You know, what is the importance of sharing these activities with other people?
Yeah, that's a good question, because we produce wine grapes in about 49 of California's 58 counties. We have about 158 AVAs in California, and all these different regions have really tight communities that depend on not only the wineries and production themselves, but the growers and the harvest that goes on in these communities. So it's a great and easy way to come and see it firsthand.
And for people who can't make it out to an event in person, DiCaro told me, there are still ways for them to participate.
Yeah, there's actually, if any of your listeners can't get to events or get to a winery, we have partnered with Visit California and California Grown to produce a iconic California recipes ebook, which pairs with California wines for each in particular recipe. You can find that ebook for free at discovercaliforniawines.com. And it's a great way for someone to make one of those wonderful California recipes and go purchase a California wine at their local retailer and pair it perfectly and enjoy it with family and friends. So that's another great way to celebrate the 19th annual California Wine Month.
That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, according to numbers released by USDA and CAPAA by the U.S. Meat Export Federation, July exports of U.S. pork continue to outpace year-ago levels. But on the other hand, beef exports took a step back in July, posting the lowest volume since January. But they do note export value per head of fed slaughter again exceeded $400. July pork exports at a little over 219,000 metric ton was up 5% year over year. Export value increased 1% to over $628 million. They note that exports to leading market Mexico continued on a record pace, while July shipments also increased significantly year over year to Central America, Taiwan, Oceania, and the Asian region and Canada. July beef exports at a little over 103 metric ton was down 18% from a year ago and the lowest in 6 months. Export value at just over $810 million was down 19% and the lowest since February. Exports posted year-over-year gains in July to Mexico, Taiwan, Canada, Hong Kong, and Africa, and increased sharply to Peru and Honduras. But they note that July exports of beef to the top three destinations, South Korea, Japan, and China, were well below last year's large totals. And following a slow second quarter, July exports of U.S. lamb muscle cuts did show signs of a rebound. July export volume at 197 metric ton was up 22% from a year ago and the highest since March. Export value at $928,000 was down 2% year over year, but the highest since April. A detailed summary of the January-July export results for U.S. beef, pork, and lamb can be found on the U.S. Meat Export Federation website, usmef.org. And week-over-week changes in the nation's pasture and rangeland conditions appeared minimal this past week, at least that's according to USDA's latest look. USDA meteorologist Brad Ribby takes a look at some of the latest notable state pasture and rangeland condition ratings.
We have two main areas where we have pretty lush pastures, even here as we head into late summer, early autumn. One of those areas is in the eastern United States. Several states, including Ohio and Tennessee, still at or above 70% of the pastures rated good to excellent. Then we have a little area in the Intermountain West and the Central Rockies that has had an exceptionally cool, wet summer. And those states where we see pastures and rangelands above 50% includes Wyoming, Utah, and Colorado. Leading the nation, 89% good to excellent this week is Wyoming. A very unusual situation there where it seems like just about every raindrop has managed to find its way into Wyoming this summer. Looking at the flip side, leading the nation this week, 72% very poor to poor is Texas. Not too far behind is Minnesota and Louisiana, tied this week for number two in the nation, 63% very poor to poor. Next on the list is Washington State at 60%. Then we have a handful of states in the plains and the Midwest above 40%.
Again, that was USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
How are GMO plants made? First, scientists look for a desired trait in a plant, animal, or even bacteria. It could be a trait like resistance to drought, insects, or viruses. Then they copy the gene that contains that trait and insert it into the DNA of the plant they want to improve. Scientists then grow that plant to see if it adopts the desired trait. Feed your mind with more GMO facts on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
There's another challenge to GMOs. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. The Center for Food Safety filed a legal appeal against the USDA in response to its genetically engineered labeling rules. The organization says those rules do not mandate clear on-package food labeling and allowed unlabeled hidden GMOs to proliferate in the U.S. food marketplace. The CFS was victorious in a 2022 district court ruling in its original USDA lawsuit, which found it unlawful to use inaccessible digital QR codes on food products. Despite the decision, the court refused to vacate USDA's decision allowing this practice. Meredith Stevenson, the CFS attorney, says USDA is hiding the presence of the majority of GMO food ingredients with its exemption for highly refined foods despite a law passed by Congress. She goes on to say the court rubber-stamped USDA's decision to exclude highly refined foods like sodas and oils from labeling and use unfamiliar terminology, keeping consumers in the dark about their food. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McOwen. There's been a lot in the news recently about wetlands. This news has involved wetlands that are subject to the Clean Water Act, but farmers may also have to deal with another type of wetland under the Swamp Buster program. Farmers that are in the federal farm programs can't farm wetlands and receive benefits, but a wetland for Swamp Buster purposes is defined differently than is a wetland under the Clean Water Act. Under Swamp Buster, a particular tract is a wetland if it has the presence of hydric soil, soil inundation for at least 7 days or saturation for at least 14 days during the growing season, and the prevalence of hydrophytic plants under undisturbed conditions. In other words, to be a wetland, a tract must have hydric soils, hydrophytic vegetation, and wetland hydrology. All three characteristics must be present. A farmed wetland includes seasonally flooded wetlands that were manipulated before December 23, 1985, but still exhibit wetland characteristics. Drains affecting these areas can be maintained, but the scope and effect of the original drainage system cannot be exceeded. Prior converted wetlands can be farmed, but they revert to protected status once abandoned. A prior converted wetland is a wetland that was totally drained before December 23, 1985. All of this is completely different than the definition of a wetland under the Clean Water Act. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McOwen.
Now that the U.S. has requested a dispute settlement panel within the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement to resolve issues with Mexico's policy on biotech products such as genetically modified corn, what might the process itself and its timeline look like? U.S. Trade Representative's Office Chief Agricultural Negotiator Doug McCaleb explains.
The process would include actually establishing the panel members, or the judges in this case. Once the panel is established, there will be a period where the participants are able to argue and bring their case and evidence to the USMCA panel. We would anticipate this entire process to wrap up in early 2024, certainly by mid-2024.
The ambassador also points out.
We were also pleased that Canada has decided to join this case as well, along with the United States.
He also notes this is a unique case in that it is the first USMCA dispute settlement panel addressing a sanitary and phytosanitary trait matter. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Farm Bureau's Harvest for All program recently received the Power of Association Summit Award from the American Society of Association Executives. Matt Feynman, AFBF Young Farmers and Ranchers Chair, says the program helps address hunger in rural America.
So the Harvest for All program, members involved in the Young Farmer and Ranchers program take the lead in planning, coordinating, and executing the initiative, often with involvement from local community leaders and supporters. It's all about addressing hunger in rural America.
In 2022, Harvest for All participants donated 25.3 million pounds of food and $1 million to local food banks. Feynman says the award recognizes the economic and societal contributions of the program.
We're really excited about receiving the Power of Association Summit Award from the American Society of Association Executives for our successful Harvest for All initiative. It's really exciting to be able to receive this award. AFBF is one of six recipients and the only association recognized with a focus on agriculture.
Feynman says the Harvest for All program embodies the spirit of Farm Bureau.
Farm Bureau is a grassroots membership agriculture and nonprofit. We organize farmers and ranchers at the local, state, and national level so that we can serve as a voice of agriculture. And to be able to bring all these young farmers and ranchers together and have the initiative of putting together these events, often with involvement from local and community leaders and supporters, it really means a lot, and it shows that we have young people out there that want to serve a purpose.
Learn more at FB.org. Michael Clements, Washington.
A trade group wants to see more aggressive deals from the Biden administration. The Biden administration has taken some heat during its first 2 years for a lack of new free trade agreements and a lack of focus on free trade. However, Brian Kiel, executive director of Farmers for Free Trade, says there has been some progress in his opinion.
President Trump had put what are called 232 tariffs on India. That was on steel and aluminum. And India responded by retaliating against a bunch of our food and ag products that were going to India. Fortunately, the Biden administration rolled back those tariffs in an agreement with India, and India agreed to roll back their tariffs on our food and ag products.
Still, he says they'd like to see the administration be more aggressive when it comes to trade deals.
Southeast Asia is a place where we'd like to see U.S. food and ag products getting in and increasing markets. Same with Africa, South America.
Kiel says, while we are not getting agreements, our competitors are. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Over the years, you've brought opioids into your home. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But holding on to opioids puts your family at risk. Learn more at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
Welcome back to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
USDA is zeroing in on corn and soybean yields as we move through September, numbers the grain trade can use with more confidence. I'm Mark Oppold with your bottom line report. This September 11th, we join others and pause to remember. National corn yields settle into a range 171 to 175 ahead of the report tomorrow. Soybeans 49.5 to 50.5. Over the last 20 years, USDA September numbers have come within trade ranges 17 times, so history is on the side of no surprises tomorrow, making for a dull range-bound trade. Big crops are getting bigger in South America, but interesting news item we came across to share. Ship loading schedules on the calendar now in southern Brazilian ports are now out more than 1.5 months. This may open the door for U.S. exports for those countries who need immediate shipment. This is the Bottom Line Report. Helena, makers of humic soil conditioners like Resurge, and Kloss Equipment, makers of the Treon Combine, join us in remembering those who lost their lives on September 11th, 2001. I'm Mark Oppold.
Agricultural trade, an important part of the U.S. economy. The 2022 federal fiscal year, from October 1st to September 30th, produced a record in ag export sales. Might FY 2023...
We are forecasting $177.5 billion.
And FY 2024, scheduled to start next month.
The August report is always interesting because it actually gives us our first look at the upcoming year's fiscal year forecast.
Reach or surpass that record. I'm Rod Bain. USDA agricultural economist Sean Arita joins us as we go through the Agriculture Department's latest quarterly ag trade forecast to find what future ag exports potentially look like in this edition of Agriculture USA. The August edition of USDA's quarterly agricultural trade forecast usually generates interest as it contains the department's first outlook at the new fiscal year. And Sean Arita of the Office of the Chief Economist says the initial U.S. ag export forecast for fiscal year 2024 indicates...
We are forecasting our exports to be $172 billion. This is down $5.5 billion from last year.
To put the comparison in context, the August ag trade forecast also included revised numbers for FY 2023 from the previous quarterly outlook in May. That number coming in at $177.5 billion in ag exports in FY 23.
This is a downward revision from our last forecast by $3.5 billion. This year, the year that we're finishing up, we are forecasted to be down by about $18.6 billion or 9%. We have lower expected wheat, corn, beef, poultry, dairy, and tree nut sales.
Yet perhaps the more significant comparison is not just year-over-year ag exports, but how those two fiscal years shape up against fiscal year 2022.
That was a banner year. We had hit almost $200 billion. It's actually $196 billion.
So while FY22 is the record to date for U.S. agricultural exports by sales, FY23, even with the revised numbers, comes in at second place all time And as for FY 2024,
that would be about $24.1 billion lower than that banner year set in 2022. That $172 billion will still mark us as having the third highest year of exports.
So what are among the contributing factors driving the initial FY 24 ag export forecast? Arita says it starts with a projected decrease of soybeans and soybean meal.
Soybeans, we are forecasting $26.5 billion, and that would be down about $5.8 billion from FY23, attributed to lower expected U.S. production forecast, tighter supply conditions relative to last year for soybeans. There's competition from South America, and we also have high domestic crush demand,
as well as dairy products.
Our exports, we're forecasting it down for this coming year by $1.2 billion. And this is reflecting lower global prices for skim milk powder, whey, cheese, and butter.
Other commodities are projected to fare better export-wise year over year.
Corn, we are forecasting $13.3 billion for FY24. That is slightly up by about $500 million, mainly on higher volume, which more than offset the lower prices. Poultry and pork, we are forecasting it up slightly on strengthening demand and more stable supplies. Horticulture, we are forecasting to increase relative to fiscal year 2023. And actually, we're forecasting a record for 2024 of $39.5 billion.
As for which nations are expected to be top markets for U.S. farm and food exports in fiscal year 2024.
China is projected to remain our largest export market. We are forecasting $30 billion for this upcoming year of exports to that market.
Yet that is down about $3 billion from the previous fiscal year,
due to some of the weaker outlook from soybeans, dairy, and beef.
Mexico and Canada, our nation's number 2 and 3 ag export markets respectively, are also expected to export less year over year, although trade numbers remain strong, according to Arena.
We're forecasting Mexico $28.2 billion and Canada $27.5 billion.
He adds lower levels of exports are projected for all major markets for FY24. One other note, U.S. imports of ag goods are expected to grow to almost $200 billion in the upcoming fiscal year. This has been Agriculture USA. I'm Ron Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
GMOs? Genetically engineered? Bioengineered? What's what? Well, GMO stands for genetically modified organism. It's the common term many people use for foods created through a process scientists call genetic engineering. And you'll start seeing bioengineered on some food packages to let you know the product or some of its ingredients come from GMOs. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
Welcome back to the show. For today's interview segment, our friend Chuck Zimmerman chatted with Kathy Eachlin, Corporate and Crop Protection Communicationist with Syngenta.
Kathy, first of all, introduce yourself for us. Tell us your name and what you do for Syngenta.
Okay, great. Hi, thank you so much. My name is Kathy Eachlin, and I am the head of Corporate and Crop Protection Communications.
Let's talk a little bit about sustainability. This has been a big topic in the whole industry, and certainly when it comes to Syngenta, you guys have been very involved too. Where do you think of that word when it comes up?
Right. Sustainability is certainly something that we are very actively engaged with, everything from Operation Pollinator to soil health to bee health. I think one of the biggest things that we are very proud of is our work, our associations, all of our partnerships. So it's not just Syngenta, but working across the ag industry and working with our clients, the farmers, legislation across the board, really looking at what is sustainable and what's sustainable health for soil and what's sustainability moving forward. And what does that look like, not just this year, but 3 to 5 years out?
Yeah, it covers a lot of different areas. And as one person I talked to today said, I include financial in that Absolutely. Definition too. But when it comes to like your company and at this point in time, you really put together a plan for this.
We have, and we actually are very proud. We're going to be rolling out next month our sustainable commitments. So we will be rolling that out globally. But again, working in partnership with our ag trade and also our ag partners and clients and customers. But we will be rolling out those five commitments of sustainability next month around the world.
How do you work with your clients on the farmer side when it comes to this issue? Do you get involved directly with them?
Absolutely. And I would say the biggest key for us is listening. I think in any type of initiative that you're doing more listening than talking is very important, because I think the needs change and the needs of our customers change from year to year. So sitting down, having those conversations, everyone from our CEO all the way down to our salesmen and CAM, key account operators, to our agri-specialist as well.
What would be an example of the question you maybe get hit with most when it comes to this from your customers?
I think for them, it's the question of what are we doing to help lead in the industry? So what are the conversations we're having on Capitol Hill and with our legislators and our lobbyists? So certainly working with them hand in hand, and as you just saw across the way, we had a wonderful panel across the way where we were talking to our congressmen, and the things like the Farm Bill are very much in Congress at the moment. But everything from Operation Pollinator to our Endangered Species Act, soil health is certainly something big as well, too. But we need to listen, but then we also need to be leaders and advocates for our customers.
Yeah, I mean, just having a plan for, you know, being sustainable, some people don't necessarily realize how important the legislative agendas are for this, too.
Absolutely. And I think it is, especially going into a political year, I think we're going to see a lot more of sustainability, whether that be in sustainable buildings or solar power, to soil health, to what are we doing on farms, and what are we doing with the bills and with Congress. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that in the next year or two.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Kathy, for visiting with me here at the Farm Progress Show at the Syngenta booth. I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now. The Federal Reserve released its August Beige Book update, a summary of commentary on current economic conditions from the Fed. The report includes several observations in the U.S. agricultural economy. Drought was affecting several of the Fed's districts across the country. In the 10th District, the Kansas City Fed says the farm economy was strong, but conditions softened alongside lower commodity prices and persistent drought. In the 11th District in Dallas, a significant portion of the district entered or re-entered drought during the past 6 weeks. In the Minneapolis Fed's 9th District, prices were retreating to levels that could be below break-even for some producers because of high input costs. In the 8th District of St. Louis, the percentage of cotton and rice rated fair or better stayed stable despite record-breaking heat and heat dome-induced thunderstorms. In the 12th District of San Francisco, conditions in agriculture and resources-related sectors remained largely unchanged. NAFB contributed to that report.
The UC Ag Experts Talk webinar series that's set to kick off next week will be focused on key issues of pest management. Each of the webinars will begin at 3 in the afternoon via Zoom, and continuing education units are pending for each one in the series. The first webinar is scheduled for Wednesday, September 20th, and will feature Dr. Neil McRoberts, who will be discussing economic thresholds within IPM systems. The second webinar, on October 25th, will consist of a presentation on the blight phase of Botrytisferia disease of pistachio and walnut and its management, given by Dr. Themis Michelides. In the last webinar in the series, on Wednesday, November 8th, Dr. Brad Hansen will provide regulatory and quarantine status and management updates for branched broom rape. More information about the webinars is available on the upcoming events page at agnetwest.com. I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
This Tuesday, USDA will put out its usual monthly report, official moniker, World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, a rather long name.
So we call it WASD.
And USDA Outlook Chairman Mark Chekanowski says each month WASD brings the markets the latest forecast for global ag supplies, trade, prices, and more. But this upcoming WASD is a special one.
It is a special WASD. WASD is turning 50 years old.
USDA releasing the first report September 17th, 1973, in an effort to promote transparency in ag markets.
And that's something that the report continues to do today.
Of course, back then, analysts were trying to do forecasting without computers and the internet and such. Of course, today, that's completely changed.
But the basic principles behind the report and the basic processes of pulling in experts from across USDA are largely unchanged from 50 years ago.
The Golden Anniversary WASD report coming out Tuesday, noon Eastern Time. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The USDA grant helping promote sustainable aviation fuel. Gevo Incorporated announced that it's received a $30 million grant from USDA for its Climate Smart Farm to Flight program. The grant is from USDA's Partnership for Climate Smart Commodities. The Gevo program is intended for tracking and quantifying the carbon intensity impact of climate smart practices while creating market incentives for low carbon intensity corn to help accelerate the production of sustainable aviation fuel and low CI ethanol. Dr. Paul Bloom, Chief Carbon Officer and Chief Innovation Officer for Gevo, says, quote, "Our farm-to-flight program aims to count all the carbon at the field level and rewards farmers on a performance basis for delivering low CI corn, as well as to accelerate the production of SAF to reduce dependency on fossil-based fuels." He adds, quote, "The program will also focus on deploying our Verity tracking program to farmers to help them measure, report, and to verify their CI reductions. The grant will also help count all carbon through the entire business system and reward farmers." NAFB contributed to that report. And in more agriculture news, local harvest data can be sent straight to your inbox. Michael Clements has more in this next report.
The DeKalb, Asgrow, and Delta Pine seed brands are offering harvest emails again this season, enabling farmers to receive local harvest data delivered automatically to their email inbox, says technical agronomist Scott Stanislav.
Growers have a lot of choice when it comes to products that they could potentially purchase to plant in their given area, and success for 24 really does start by making a very smart decision on seed purchases. And what these emails provide are detailed information by plot, including the location, soil type, planting and harvest date, as well as yield and moisture. Growers can receive these emails at no charge by signing up at DeKalbAsgrowDeltaPine.com/harvest.
Stanislav says plot results can give farmers valuable insights into how the same or similar products may perform on their farms. In addition to DeKalb, Asgrow, and Delta Pine harvest data, some reports include results from other seed brands as well.
Localized data is very important just to see how products perform across multiple plots within a given area. Even though they may not have had those particular products on their farm, they will know a grower that had an opportunity to look at these products and can communicate with them locally on the results that they saw on their farm.
He encourages farmers to evaluate multi-year data where possible, although that information is not included in the harvest emails.
I'm always an advocate of looking at multiple years worth of data to be able to see how a product performs, because at the end of the day, stability is what brings success to a farm. And so we want to look at multiple years worth of data, see what products can stand out across those multiple years, because every year is a little bit different. One year we may have ample rainfall and higher yields. The next year we may be in a bad drought. So looking for those trends across multiple years and seeing what's really stable is key to success on a grower's farm.
Once again, to receive harvest emails, sign up by visiting DeKalb, AsgrowDeltaPine.com/harvest. Michael Clements reporting.
More than $80 million in climate action grants were awarded throughout the nation to support the implementation of climate smart solutions. The Center for Regenerative Agriculture and Resilient Systems, also known as CRARS, with the College of Agricultural and Natural Sciences at California State University Chico, together with multiple collaborating partner institutes, received a $6 million grant. The grant will fund the California Soil Carbon Accrual Program and the Workforce Training Program that is designed to conduct on-farm research, remote model sensing technologies, and provide professional workforce training across the state. CRARS Director Cindy Daly says, quote, "We're thrilled to have been awarded the California Climate Action Grant. These funds will be instrumental in moving our climate goals forward as a campus and as a regional partner working toward a higher degree of preparedness. Climate change is upon us, and no one feels the effects more than producing agriculture. It's imperative that we develop more effective farming strategies that build resilience for future food security and create a workforce that is climate literate, with the skills and knowledge to manage these changes in the future. The purpose of the project is to address soil erosion, degradation, and diminished water availability, which are all critical issues facing California agriculture."
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.